It's hour of the Jason Rance Show, brought to you by Robinson Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
In a neighborhood that for well over a year has been complaining about the criminal homelessness problem being completely unaddressed by the city of Seattle, completely unaddressed and ignored by the city of Seattle. They just saw another crime committed. This time, a horrific crime. A woman was attacked in a bathroom stall at a Ballard car dealership, then raped by this homeless man identified as Christopher Teal, who apparently admitted to the crime. Now, most of the details of what happened are way too graphic for radio, way too graphic for TV. Incredibly graphic, so we're not going to get into all of the details, but understand, this was a horrific crime. The victim told police that this individual, Christopher Teal, this monster, said to this girl, "You want this, God wants this." Teal removed the victim's clothes and sexually assaulted her, according to Q13. She screamed for help, but the suspect choked the woman to make her stop. This is not the first time someone has been attacked in this kind of way in the Ballard neighborhood. Kelly Heron, she's the woman who fought a homeless man off at Golden Gardens at a bathroom last year. She talked to Cairo 7 about the alleged rape that happened at the car dealership on Monday.
How many more women need to be assaulted? How many more of these stories do we have to hear before we are heard?
I'd like to know the answer to that question. Because the city doesn't have one. How many rapes need to happen? We've had attempted rapes, and this issue has been unaddressed. And now we have an actual rape by a homeless person in the Ballard neighborhood, the neighborhood that has been at the center of citizen activism trying to get something done. How many more women need to be raped before the city gets this problem under control? 7? 3? 15? I don't know. And Jacob, if you can do this, go on the Twitter feeds for the Seattle council members, like Mike O'Brien, et cetera. Let's see if they've actually responded to what happened, because this is in his neighborhood. Let's see if he's actually said anything. But the more we're digging into the details of the rapist, we're getting some really scary stuff. Because apparently there's been a warrant out for this guy's arrest for several months. It has to do with another crime, him not showing up to court. Turns out this dude was living in Ballard in a tiny house village there. And apparently they don't check applicants for warrants. Now, another tiny house village, specifically, by the way, for drug users, is opening in South Lake Union. One block west from a few thousand apartment complexes. One block east of several restaurants in Lake Union, literally across the street from a hotel. Low-income housing institute is going to help manage that. They also managed the Ballard Tiny House Village. This is a problem that is not getting better. It is getting worse.
It feels so hopeless. I honestly don't know what else to do. I just see it getting worse and worse and worse.
I'm told Mike O'Brien has not responded yet on Twitter. Maybe check his blog. Maybe he wrote a blog. I'm just kind of curious to see if the guy who is partly to blame for the homelessness crisis in the city has said anything. Maybe showed. Just say, "We're very sorry that this happened." Because here's what I think is going to be the response. This is my guess. My guess is you're going to have people like Mike O'Brien and Shama Sawan and Lorena Gonzalez come out and say what happened to this woman is a horrible thing, but let's not go overboard and pretend that all homeless people are like this. They'll do a defense of homelessness when there should not be a defense of homelessness right now. No one is claiming that all homeless people are rapists, but let's give you a reality check about the homeless population in the Seattle area that's spreading outside of Seattle and hitting folks in Tacoma and Everett and Bellevue. These folks are overwhelmingly dealing with either a drug addiction or some kind of addiction or a mental illness that's not being treated. Lots of them are criminals. Lots of them are choosing to use sidewalks in public as their bathrooms. And lots of them, while being offered some help, are saying no. That's the reality of homelessness in the city of Seattle. And the reality is people are getting hurt. The reality is there's no actual plan. There's money for plans, But there's no actual plan. There was an audit in the King County area in Seattle about how homeless dollars are spent. And they didn't say there's a lack of funding for meaningful change. They said it's the people who are in charge not knowing what the hell it is they're doing. That they've got the money. And when you talk to people on the ground, whether it's the United Way, whether we're talking about Seattle's Union Gospel Mission, sure, they'll take more money. But they all acknowledge money's not the problem. The system's the problem. Now, Jennifer is the executive manager of the car dealership where this rape took place. She spoke to our sister station, Car Radio, on the Dory Monson Show about what ended up happening.
This is our home away from home. And to have something like this happen is just awful and unnecessary. And, I mean, at some point, something has to be done about our challenges here in Seattle.
Is anything being done? Doesn't feel like it.
Every day we have to have these conversations about, you know, hey, so-and-so is over here, you know, avoid that block, or we got to walk in pairs, or, you know, it's a constant conversation. You're hyper aware, or you have to be, or else bad things happen.
That's the Seattle the council has created over the last several years. And oftentimes when I talk about this on Twitter, or I'll get text messages at 1-800-465-8770, we'll hear from people who said, this is the reason why I got out of Seattle. This is the reason why I chose to move. And they end up living in Tacoma or Shoreline or Mukilteo or Redmond. And they're starting to figure out that they can't escape what's going on in Seattle because it spreads. It's like a virus. It spreads. When you have a major region doing absolutely nothing about homelessness, well, then that problem just gets a lot worse. And you can only contain it for so long. This is the Seattle the council has created. Now, I'm going to tell you specifically at 7 o'clock how you can help before this spreads to your neighborhood. I'm going to tell you at 7 o'clock what you can do, but I actually need you to do some work. It's not going to be a lot. It's a phone call or an email. You get to choose. But we'll talk about that in the 7 o'clock hour, right at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. So I hope you'll tune in for that. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
So I can tell you, I have confirmed that several businesses, including Amazon, they're actively readying a potential initiative that would repeal the head tax in Seattle. I spoke yesterday to a source who's part of the discussions. That source tells me that the businesses in question, including Vulcan, including Amazon, including the organizations that represent hotels in the area, because hotels make about $6 million every single year just from Amazon flying people into the area. That number coming from the Seattle Times. I can tell you that they got together and have been getting together over the last several days, talking about getting an initiative on the ballot to overturn in Seattle this disastrous head tax. The head tax that everyone in the region is talking about because they understand what this does to business. They understand what this message is to businesses, which is screw you for being successful here. We're going to punish you for bringing jobs to the region. Now, they only need 22,000 signatures to qualify for the ballot. But it is running. They're getting up against the clock because the deadline is coming. What they're doing in the meantime is they're doing some polling. I heard from a couple people, I haven't been able to confirm this, that they got phone calls with Paul Allen's name attached to it, and it had to do with polling, and some people seem to think that maybe this means he's running for office. We don't know yet, but I do know that Strategies 360 did that poll in partnership with Cairo 7 just, what, 2 or 3 days ago? And it was rather damning as it relates to the head tax and the level of support. Seattle just isn't there. And so it seems like Amazon and these other businesses are getting together and they are getting ready to do their own polling just to make sure the Strategies 360... To make sure the Strategies 360 poll is accurate. So we'll end up finding out what they believe is the case when it goes to whether or not people can support this thing. I hope they do it. I'm hearing that they might make the announcement in the next several days. So I can categorically tell you that they are at least having these meetings, and it seems like they're very serious about it. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. What does it take to be called a local to Pacific Northwest? According to a poll that was done by PEMCO, some people say your entire life if you want to be considered actually a member of the Pacific Northwest. So earlier in the year, according to the Times, about 1,200 residents of Washington and Oregon were asked that question. How long do you have to live here in order to be considered a local? And it's an interesting conversation because I was not born here. I've lived here now 11 years. Jacob was born here. He is from Milton, the gem of Pierce County, although he never says that because he wants to hide that fact. So he'll just say Tacoma because he wants to protect his parents from having people move into the neighborhood. So according to 20% of Washingtonians who were polled, they say that Jacob's the local to Pacific Northwest. I am not. 20% say all of his or her life means you're a local.
You can never leave. That's what's a little bit weird to me.
It's cultish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's cultish. You have to be born here and you can never go. What if you leave for college? I think they'll give you a pass.
You'll
come back, but you have like a 3-week period of after graduation, you got to come back.
And you have to come back every vacation have opportunity.
At least 3/4 of his or her life, 18%, said that's what qualifies someone as a local. About half of her life or his life, 27%. And about 1/4 of his or her life, 11%. So I'm 36, and I've been here for 10, 11 years, so that's not half. I'm in that quarter-ish. Mm-hmm. So that only 11% of people think that I'm a local. And it's weird because the numbers in Oregon mostly are the same, except there's 5% more that say you have to be here all your life. That's a problem for people who take that position. That number should be zero, right? I mean, you want people to set up shop here. You want them to feel like they're a part of the community. And if you don't treat them as a part of the community, they're not going to feel welcome. It's going to cause strife in neighborhoods and communities. Maybe they don't end up putting as much time as they normally would into solving a neighborhood problem.
I don't think they want, but they don't care about that. They don't care. They don't want people here. I mean, that's the basis of it.
But that's my point is that's dangerous. That's not a good place to be that like, no, all these people, we don't want them here. Well, why don't you leave? You're the problem. If you don't want people to move here, you're the problem. Okay. Let's just be upfront about that. That's on you. That's not on the person who's living here. The people who are moving here are doing so for a better life with their family. They're taking on jobs. They're committing to the local economy. And you don't want that. Oh, you're not one of us. Maybe we shouldn't have conversations constantly about us versus them. Maybe you're actually part of the problem, Jacob. It's the Jason Rance Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Tacoma's Lincoln High School is standing behind an assistant vice principal after some parents alerted the school and the media that he raps about a school shooting, though it is delivered through the eyes of a troubled high school student. The educator in question is Logic Amen, and he joins me now. Logic, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to articulate and clarify my artistic expression.
Yeah, so let's talk about when this controversy started, because it feels like maybe it's been going on for a little bit with the particular parents who are calling the music into question, but it's only being reported on in the last week or so. So how did this actually start?
Basically, it all started from my point of view, an unethical premise of the parents just not liking me, and there was an incident that happened at school. Which just basically reminded them how much they don't like me. So they began to scrub my social media and they came across my music and have been very public, even in the article with the TNT with Craig Saylor, that they don't like me.
Why don't they like you?
My music. They don't like me based on the interactions that I've had with their children, in which I was just following protocol and how I was trained and dealing with the circumstances at school. And so can't speak on specifically what happened, because, you know, that will call my professionality and my code of ethics into question. But I just did anything I could do based on how I was trained by the Tacoma School District.
So there's some interaction where the parents did not like the way you handled it, or they perceive the way you handled it. They go online, they see that you moonlight as a rapper, you put out some of your music online, they found a song they didn't like. Explain the song about the school shooting as told through the eyes of a student.
Yeah, what is being done is it's taken out of context. It's only just grabbing the last part where, give me a reason to load up a rifle. And what it does is, the song is full of literary devices, because it is poetry. It's full of metaphors. Mm-hmm. It's full of double entendres. It's full of symbolism. And basically what we're dealing with is a young child of color, or a black student, and he's going to a predominantly white school. But before that, you know, he's dealing with his mom is, you know, having an affair with Santa. That's symbolism too, having an affair with craft capitalism, you know what I'm saying, and consumerism during the holiday season. They have financial hardships, so they can't meet the expectations, you know what I'm saying, of the holiday season and buying these materialistic, you know, items. So there's family dysfunction. It also talks about, you know, people are walking around stressed in the household. His brother started smoking. I didn't clarify what he was smoking, but I just wanted to let them know there is some drug addiction going on in the household. Also says somebody is choking, so there is some domestic violence going on in the household. And so he's just, you know, and then he goes to school and he's one of the only black students there, and then he's reading Huck Finn.
Yeah.
And they're calling him a token. So it's like he has all these things, you know, coming down on him. He said, give me a reason to load up a rifle. And from my perspective, I'm speaking for the marginalized voices, you know what I'm saying, you know, who don't have a platform to say how they feel. I'm speaking on behalf of my students, some of the students nationwide, you know, who go through these things and want to cope with their problems and their emotional disposition by, unfortunately, committing acts of violence.
Yeah.
Awareness that this... Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, the thing is here, you know, your point, whether people agree with it or not, is immaterial, at least to me, right? I can disagree with the perspective in the song. It doesn't change my opinion, which is you have the right to do this. You don't necessarily have the right to perform this in front of students, but you have absolutely every right. You shouldn't be punished by the school. The parents have no case whatsoever to complain about this, because it was done outside of property, outside of your duties as a school administrator. There's two points that I think are important to point out. Number one, I do think that if a student had lyrics like this in your song and they performed them, that the school would look into that student. If it turned out that the student performed your song, do you think Tacoma's Lincoln High School would react in the same general way of, oh, it was done off campus, or do you think that they would get involved? Because this comes on the heels of the story 2 days ago. Can't remember the state. I think it was Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where a kid uses his fingers to shoot someone, and he's a 12-year-old kid with autism, and they end up suspending him and kicking him out of the school and arresting him for a threat.
Now, are you saying that performing where, at school, or just performing
if one of your students had the lyrics that you had, would the school investigate? Would the school call them into the office and try to figure it out? Or would they just say, oh, this is freedom of expression?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there would definitely be some form of scrutiny. I mean, there's no it's a case by case scenario. I mean, we have to do some kind of assessment and find out, you know, what's actually going on. Is there any like record of violence? Mm-hmm. And there's a threat assessment that security does, but it's very, very, it's nearing a false equivalency when you have an adult who is an educator who is telling a short story and has all the, you know what I'm saying, the credentials behind it and using literary devices and who's an educator as opposed to a child, and it's writing it and you don't have any kind of background of what's going on. I mean, it's pretty thorough. Like, I mean, you can look me up, man. I have no criminal background. I'm not a gun owner. I don't use marijuana. I have no criminal record. You know, I've been in, you know, Tacoma Public Schools with no disciplinary actions.
Yeah.
Or
and
no
I'm not calling into
HR
question
the last 7 years.
Yeah, and I'm not
right.
calling
so
into question any of your background.
I don't want to create the false equivalent.
Sure.
Comparing me to a student because I, you know, not to, you know, be conceited or anything or be ego driven, but I just think that my credentials are just way more overwhelming than a student.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Logic Amen. He is a assistant vice principal at Tacoma's Lincoln High School. He says some parents who have a beef with him are taking issue with some rap lyrics that he has posted online and performed online. It was outside of the school. The school itself and the district is standing with him, and I think that's the right move. I do question one thing that I think you tweeted about in relationship to this. It seems like you think that this was an attack on you for being black. The tweet that you posted was, almost any time they attack hip-hop disproportionate to other music forms, it's a passive-aggressive attack against black and brown people. So I reject that on a couple of bases. Number one, at least I haven't seen any evidence, and I haven't heard you make the claim that these parents in particular are upset based upon any racial issue. And number two, couldn't one make the argument that rap music, at least right now, as a genre, disproportionately talks about violence in relationship to some of the other genres out there?
I wouldn't say disproportionately talks about it. It depends on, you know, what level of hip-hop you're listening
sure.
to. You know what I'm saying? If you're listening to emo rap, which is like Drake and stuff like that, which we call emo rap, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to find a lot of violence in it, too. If you listen to like club music, you're not going to find a lot of it. I mean, there's just different genres within, you know what I'm saying, the culture and the music of hip hop. So I wouldn't say it's disproportionately, you know, amount is, you know, is violent. I can't necessarily say that. I think sometimes when people make, you know, comments and make these assessments of hip hop music, they're not hip hop historians,
mm-hmm.
nor are they like hip hop activists, or they're not educated on hip hop. They're not even educated on the literary devices. It's like, even with my song, it's just like, why would you even, if I say I'm put Santa on his hit list, it's like you're totally ignoring the literary devices that are at play in that poetry. It's just like, that's my whole point.
You expect that to a degree, right? Like, at some point, you don't expect anyone who listens to
it. But it's not supposed to be like I'm supposed to accept it. You know what I'm
sure.
saying?
No, of course
you
not.
You know, it's not acceptable. You know, if we're going to be educated, if we're going to bring someone to the carpet, right,
mm-hmm.
and, like, have this scholarly exchange, right, and at the end of the scholarly exchange, you know, your debate is that this man is a bad influence and that, you know, he should not be teaching kids and, you know, he's a poor role model, right? So if you, with the same, you know what I'm saying, energy that you use that scholarly exchange, you should use that same scholarly, you know what I'm saying, energy to, like, really investigate, you know, hip-hop and find out what it is. Like, if I say I'm putting Santa on my hit list, that doesn't really mean I'm going to put Santa. Santa doesn't even exist, so what is this man really talking about? It's the metaphor for that time of the year. But what I'm saying is, see, but that's another thing what they do. This is the same thing I'm talking about, Jason. This is what they do with hip-hop music. Hip-hop is not respected as a sophisticated, respected, you know what I'm saying, art form. It doesn't have the same liberty and freedom when it comes to artistic license. I mean, we can have people like, you know, play in mob movies, you know, and star in the film Soprano. I mean, in the show Sopranos, would have sexes and violin and racist, you know what I'm saying, over and undertones. But when they leave the set and they leave the script, then it's, oh, they were just artists. They were just entertainers. Like, we're not respected that, though. And that's what I meant by that tweet.
Yeah.
That's what I meant by that tweet.
And I suppose to a degree, I agree with that. But, I mean, remember also with The Sopranos, you had a bunch of Italian-American organizations coming out and saying that this
is,
you know, dangerous to our culture. You had Marilyn Manson, yeah. who's a white dude, who was under attack and blamed for Columbine. You had rock and roll music. Even the Beatles were blamed generationally for problems at the time. So I don't know if it's necessarily unique to hip hop or rap in general, because, you know, as you know, Beyonce, Jay-Z, I mean, Drake, I mean, these are incredibly popular, well-respected musicians that have been credited, particularly Beyonce, in having a positive change on culture.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Everything that you said is true. I mean, those case-by-case, you know, scenarios and those pockets that happen with Marilyn Manson and, you know, But when I'm saying when the main character from The Sopranos leaves the set, he's not responsible for the role he played. And those things that you mentioned are exceptions. It's the rule for hip-hop. It really is. It's the rule. It will be the exception if someone said, oh, man, he's just rapping. Let him be a principal. But it is the rule for hip-hop. If I say something on a hip-hop track, if I rap about it, then, oh, it's got to be true. We're going to hold him to it. It doesn't have the same, you know, it doesn't have the same liberty and the freedom. And as a hip-hop artist, I can speak to that, you know what I'm saying, more than someone who's not a hip-hop artist. I'm sorry. You're not a part of the culture. You're not a part of the group. I know what it feels like to be targeted unfairly and disproportionately and not have that artistic license.
And I think that that's a fair point. I think it's one that people should think about. I don't know if this case, I mean, flat out, do you think the parents are targeting you because of the color of your skin?
I'm making observations.
I know, but I'm... Do you think that's why they're upset?
The fact of the matter is I'll make an observation that they're not going after anybody else in the school. You know, they're not scrubbing their social media.
Yeah, but you said they have a reason. They perceived you as being unfair to their students, which, fine. I mean, I think that's probably why they're doing it. It sounds like you're suggesting that you're making the leap to them also being upset on a basis of race.
I think people should do, Jason? I think they should go look at some of these people's social media, and then you can make the observation if you think if it's racially motivated or not.
And I think that is 100% fair and open game. When you go after people, you are going to be subject to the same exact scrutiny that you use against the people you say you're upset with. Again, I've been talking with Logic Amen. He's the assistant vice principal over at Lincoln High School. Logic, I appreciate you stopping by and having this conversation. I think it's an important one. I'm glad to get your context on it.
Oh, man, I appreciate you giving me an opportunity once again to clarify and articulate my expression. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I value the work that you do, and it's always an entertaining and educational program, whether I agree or disagree.
There you go. See, that's what I like about folks like Logic. He's willing to listen to me, and I'm willing to listen to him. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM in the Greater East Side. Governor Jay Inslee and Secretary of State Kim Wyman announced that they're paying for paid postage on your ballots, though they won't be paying for it in King County this year, a move my next guest is upset about and says was patently unfair. Joining me on the line is the chair of the King County Council, Democrat Joe McDermott. Sir, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me.
So the reason why they're not paying for it is because King County Council decided to act unilaterally and pass their paid postage bill. Why is this shocking to you?
Well, first, let me say I'm glad that everyone in the state will have postage paid ballots to return their ballots this fall. I think that's an important investment in democracy and one that we've seen in King County dramatically improve voter participation, the number of ballots that are returned. So I'm excited by the fact that everyone in the state is going to have this opportunity. And then what happened is earlier this year in the legislature, there was a bipartisan bill to have postage paid ballots. That didn't get to the governor's desk before the end of the legislative session. And so, yes, King County took the step of funding postage paid ballots in the county, in the jurisdiction we can affect, last week.
Is the county good for the money? It's about $380,000-something.
Yes. County's good for the money, and it's a solid investment in democracy.
So then where is the concern? Because Governor Jay Inslee says they will reimburse you under the state legislature, but you'll have to wait until next year. If you've got the money there and it's a good, wise investment and you wanted to do it first, why are you upset?
Well, I didn't need to do it first, but it's an important investment in democracy, in voter participation, and when the state is going to make an investment in elections, I believe they should do that statewide. And they're going to front the money for 38 counties, and the 39th county, they will go to the legislature and ask for reimbursement come January. And you know that you can't count on anything the legislature is going to do until it's done. So that's a gamble. And it would be much better public policy for the state to be making a statewide investment rather than a selective investment.
Well, wouldn't they have made the statewide investment anyway, had you not moved at the time that you did?
The legislature adjourned earlier this year without postage paid ballots made, and there was the governor and the secretary of state were showing no sign of taking that issue up until after King County did what we could within our jurisdiction.
So what are you calling on the governor to do? Right now, you want him to find the funding for this? Have you had any conversations?
I'd invite the governor and the secretary of state to dig deeper into the budgets as they did to find the funds for 38 counties, to dig deeper and find the funds for all 39 counties, to front the funding for the entire state, not be selective about it and go ask for reimbursement later for King County.
You've already got the money, right? I mean, so here's my point, because I get why you're upset, right? I get the concern, but I also understand...
My disappointment.
Yeah, but I also understand the perspective of the state official saying, look, you forced our hand, you moved before we did, so now we have to essentially create the paid postage program, which, by the way, I also am a supporter of, for different reasons, but I'm a total supporter of that. Why would they spend extra $384,000 if you've already found the money for it? Doesn't it make more sense from a budgetary standpoint, from their perspective, to just let the state legislature handle it next year when you've already found the money?
You know, if they're talking about investing state money in this and seeking reimbursement come January, why not make that an upfront investment for everybody now? And it's not just King County's
cheaper
budget that... Exactly. And why not make that investment in democracy?
Because they don't have to.
King County's,
but right, because I mean, they don't have to. You've already made that investment. I'm just saying, from their perspective, they don't need to, because they know that either way, they're going to have every ballot covered. And it just seems, you know, when we're talking about this budget year, I have to assume whenever you're moving things around, it could get a little bit tricky. And so they're saying to themselves, yeah, they've already covered it. This is one less thing we have to worry about.
You're right. They don't have to, but it's about fairness. And I think it's important for the state to treat, if the state's going to make an investment in elections, they do that fairly statewide. And it's not just about King County's budget and King County's money. Remember that any jurisdiction, any local government that has a measure on the ballot is billed for their share of that election cost. And so cities, school districts, local jurisdictions across King County will be bearing their share of that investment, same jurisdictions in other counties won't be.
Sure, but the other side, so Kim Wyman's point, Secretary of State Wyman, Republican, her point is it's not fair to have one county decide that they're going to pay for the postage of everybody else. Wouldn't it have been more fair, even if it is a little bit annoying and doesn't go on the timeline that I think most people would have wanted who are proponents of this, wouldn't it have been more fair to let the state take this up when they clearly showed their willingness to take on the issue? It just didn't happen in this last session?
Well, are they clearly showing their intent to take up the issue if they don't adopt it? It's legislative action, not inaction, that shows intent.
Last question. Have you officially reached out to the governor's office to appeal to him?
The governor and the secretary of state, both.
And have they responded yet?
Not at present.
Okay. Well, once they do, we'll certainly be willing to make sure that that gets out there. I'd be curious to find out what the response is. Again, I've been talking with the chair of the King County Council, Democrat Joe McDermott, our Democratic friend who talks to a Republican, and I always like that. Thanks for coming on the show again, Councilmember McDermott. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH.